Welcome back to a special Super Bowl edition of Radio Boston. I'm Shira Springer. And I'm in Minnesota for Super Bowl 52, where on Sunday, the New England Patriots will face off against the Philadelphia Eagles. There's a lot riding on this game, including for Massachusetts Attorney General Maura Healey and her counterpart from Pennsylvania, Josh Shapiro.
And when the Patriots crush the Eagles, I want to see you do your job wearing a Tom Brady jersey at your next public event.
Listen, when the Eagles fly to victory, you have to agree to don the midnight green at your next press conference in Massachusetts.
Deal.
Deal.
No, I fully expect that, you know, Mayor Walsh is probably going to make a bet with the mayor of Philly, and we'll make a bet with the governor of Pennsylvania, and off we'll go. Right.
My betting career with mayors is over. And the moment I stopped betting, we won the Super Bowl in Seattle. We won the Super Bowl in Atlanta. So I'm not going to put any jinx on the Patriots or any of our Boston teams.
Believe me, we don't want to jinx it either. I'm here with Steve Buckley, sports columnist for the Boston Herald, who's also in Minnesota for the Super Bowl. Hello, Steve.
Good to see you. How are you?
Good. Have you gotten a chance to go downtown and explore all the goings-on and the festivities?
Oh, I have. I mean, I've done 9 Super Bowls now, and it really would be such a waste if you covered any of these events and didn't partake in the dessert offerings, if you will. and there's always clowns and people with funny hats and signs and free things and food.
And human snow globes here in Minnesota. That's an actual fact.
And I've been telling friends all week, I went to the Mall of America, and I stood where home plate used to be for Metropolitan Stadium, the old Minnesota Twins, the very spot where Harmon Killebrew hit like 243 of his home runs. And how can I come out here and not be there and do that?
Yeah. You know what's really stood out to me this time is it's a sort of like Olympics light in the way that Minnesotans are really trying to promote the bold north and this city and using this as an opportunity to draw tourists to this area. They're really seizing this as an opportunity like many Olympic hosts do. Have you felt that kind of promotional verve behind everything?
As a guy from born and raised in the East Coast and from Boston, when you come out here, you're overwhelmed by the niceness. Now, I'm certainly not suggesting people in Boston are not nice, but we're nice in a hurry. Out here, people are nice in a much slower, how are you? And rather than just say, how are you, they want to genuinely know how you are.
Yeah.
They wait for the answer.
Speaking of niceness, I'm going to have Eric Adelson join us. He's a reporter, a columnist for Yahoo Sports. And I want to talk about the niceness. When we talk about niceness, we usually don't think about Eagles fans. But, listen, Eric, welcome, Eric, first of all, if you're connected to us. Are you there, Eric?
Yes. Hi, Shira. Hi, Steve. How are you guys?
Hey.
Hey, Eric. Now, Eric, the last time the Eagles were in the Super Bowl was in 2005, and they have never been Super Bowl champions, though, to be fair, they've won the NFL championship. It was sort of the precursor name to the Super Bowl. First of all, have you encountered Eagles fans and, you know, sort of the mix with the Eagles fans and the Minnesota niceness?
You know, it's interesting because I met an Eagles fan at the game last week, 2 weeks ago, at the NFC championship. And this was an Eagles fan who had moved to Minnesota. So she was concerned about going home. She said her house had already been egged by Vikings fans. And now she's going to go home as a victor. But it was interesting to get her take because she had this sort of Philadelphia attitude. And as Steve said, nice in a hurry. And it was interesting to get her perspective on what it was going to be like. It's interesting because a lot of people here, you guys have seen it, are a little upset that their team isn't there. It's a little bit of a shot to them, a slap to them that they didn't make it. But the Eagles fans, I have to say, being there a couple weeks ago, it was a different feel than usual. The usual feeling in Philadelphia is there's impending doom, that something bad is about to happen to their team. But this time when I was there, it felt different. It felt more optimistic, more excited, and almost like it's house money. They lost their quarterback. They still survived. They still made it. So this is about as upbeat as I've ever seen Philly.
Yeah, I think that there are going to be a lot of Vikings fans rooting for the Patriots. But the Patriots are also a team that people love to hate. And Patriots fan Dean Torrey from Chicago had some ideas about why.
People love to hate on the Patriots because their team's not as good as ours. That's just really what it comes down to. I mean, Why else would you hate on greatness?
Now, I have to ask both of you, what's that? What's your take on that? We'll start with Steve and then go to Eric. And I'm also wondering, is all this dynasty building that the Patriots do good for the NFL? So, Steve, are dynasties like the Patriots good for the NFL?
I've heard a million times people are sick of the Patriots. They don't want to talk about the Patriots anymore. It's slowing the game down. But you've got to think in terms of logistics and math. And people who buy a ticket to a Broadway show, they want to see the headliner. They don't want to see the stand-in. And it's the same thing with the Super Bowl. Tom Brady and the New England Patriots are a marketable commodity. And, we love that scrappy underdog team that rises from the ashes and all those great cliches. But Tom Brady, at the end of the day, is box office. And with all respect to Jacksonville Jaguars fans, if you had the Jaguars in the Super Bowl against the Eagles, the NFL would have suffered.
And Eric, we have about 45 seconds here. You know, your take on whether the dynasty is good for the league.
This will probably get me disconnected, but the Patriots and the Yankees, I mean, they're the Yankees. They're the team.
Oh, totally.
Tom Brady is Derek Jeter. You hate him and you love him. And you can't dispute the excellence. It's extremely watchable. And I lived in New York for 10 years during the height of the Yankees dynasty, and it got kind of annoying at times as sort of a carpetbagger. But I miss watching that team a little bit. I miss seeing Derek Jeter play, and so I'm really kind of soaking this up now that this might be closer to the end of Tom Brady's career. We might never see a quarterback this good, and although that grates on people, I think it's true. And I think towards the end you might get a little softening towards the Patriots for that reason.
Well, that's Eric Adelson. He's a columnist for Yahoo Sports. Thank you for joining us, Eric.
Thank you.
And speaking of Brady, Steve, as Eric was talking about, he's sort of a person, you know, quarterback people either love or hate. And it's been an interesting couple of weeks for him. You know, there's been the gloves at the press conferences to hide the cut. There's been the Tom versus Time Facebook video. And then there was also the controversy with Boston sports radio station WEI after a host made some remarks about his daughter, calling her annoying with some not so flattering language. Steve, you host the Two Outs podcast on WEEI with Alex Reamer, who made the comment. What's your reaction to that controversy?
He botched it. There's no doubt about it. Alex did. And it's funny because there's been some day after contrarian that Brady shouldn't have put his little child in the documentary, that he should keep his family out of it and so forth. But that misses the point entirely. And I've talked to Alex a number of times prior to what happened the other night, and I've told him often, and there's a term I use, I refer to people who are not public figures as civilians. You leave civilians out of it. Husbands, wives, boyfriends, girlfriends, and especially children, do not bring them into the discussion unless it's delightfully anecdotal and fun for the whole family. If it's anything that the needle even tilts toward being negative or cynical or whatnot, leave it out. And he violated that very, very simple rule. And more's the point, he violated it regarding an iconic quarterback who's on that so-called Mount Rushmore that we all like to talk about with Larry Bird and Ted Williams and Bobby Orr and all these guys. And he's paying a price for it.
And I just want to turn briefly to some of the bigger issues. I mean, obviously, that's sort of a local controversy that's gone national because it involves Tom Brady. But you and I were both at the Goodell press conference mm-hmm. the other day. And I don't know about you, but it seems often like a bit of a dog and pony show where, you know, kind of it's all for appearances and it's about protecting the image of the NFL.
The shield.
Yeah, the shield. Exactly. Protecting the shield. And I think, you know, concussions come up and, you know, Goodell has his standard answer. We're there for the safety of, you know, we're doing all we can for the safety of the players. And, you know, the political stuff comes up and he says, well, we have this new social justice committee and it's, you know, $90 million over 7 years and five players and five owners on this committee. And we're headed in the right direction. I'm wondering, what was your impression of that press conference? And do you think that the league will ever truly be held accountable or, you know, recognize the responsibility it has when it comes to both concussions and sort of the social justice issues that the players want to raise?
I'm not a doctor. I'm not a physical therapist. But just as someone who's watched football for a number of years and covered it and written about it, the NFL, in my view, won't be fully accountable until it gets rid of Thursday night football. And again, I'm not in the training room. I'm not working with these guys.
And
on
that's
a daily
because
basis.
There's short rest between yes. the Sunday game and the Thursday and, game, and that often leads to a lot of injuries.
And I've been interviewing players all week for a piece I'm writing literally as we speak. And players, to a man, will tell you they understand the risks going in. I think they just kind of say that because they do it by rote now. They also tell me that, you know, when did you first understand that football is a violent game? Almost to a man, they say third grade, fourth grade, when you first start playing. Just because they're 8 years old doesn't mean they don't feel the impact of it being hit by a larger eight-year-old. So they kind of grow up with that, and in some measure, dancing past the graveyard, they embrace it. But it is a violent game, and I can't fathom why a player who plays in the NFL on Sunday is fully locked and loaded to play again on Thursday. I have an issue with that. I always have.
What about the social justice component? I mean, the fact that politics is always coming up, and then the league sort of it's almost window dressing, it appears. We're doing this, we're doing that, but, you know, they never really directly address it. At least they haven't yet. Maybe this committee will.
Maybe it will, and I think it is window dressing. And if you speak to taking a knee during the national anthem, for instance, if you talk to individual players, I mean, people have a habit of taking a step back and looking at the headline and not at the individual player. Brandon Cooks, just to pick one individual player, spoke incredibly with incredible eloquence about taking a knee and how his father was in the Marines and an uncle that was in Vietnam and so forth. And does anyone think for a moment that this person, this human being, this American citizen was disrespecting the military when he did that? I thought he spoke with incredible eloquence.
Now, I want to turn to another issue the NFL has to contend with, and that's keeping fans safe at the Super Bowl. Now, I'm sure you've noticed, Steve, the intense and very visible security here in Minneapolis and St. Paul and Bloomington, where the Mall of America is located. If you go to any of the Super Bowl-related venues, the first thing you notice is, you know, you see police patrols, bomb-sniffing dogs, officers in tactical gear, and I've even heard some helicopters. Jeffrey Miller now joins us. He is the former NFL Senior Vice President and Chief Security Officer. He has done security for 8 Super Bowls, and he's on the line now with us from San Diego. Hello, Jeffrey.
How are you today?
Good, Jeffrey. I think one of the questions that comes to mind with me with regard to Super Bowl security is, how do you deal with a stadium that's downtown, like the one here in Minneapolis? Are there any unique challenges?
There absolutely are unique challenges to a stadium that is downtown, such as the one in Minneapolis. Obviously, we've played Super Bowls at a number of different types of stadiums, and when you're playing at one with a lot of standoff distance, it's easier to set your perimeter and do all the things you need to do from the outside in. Obviously, when you're dealing with something that's downtown, and that stadium, much like the stadium it replaced, doesn't have much parking or areas for tailgating, that sort of thing. So there's lots of challenges that you have to weave into it. Plus, there are also other buildings and businesses and structures that are within that, what we like to call that inner perimeter that we want to cordon off. So there's always challenges when they have the Super Bowl in Detroit. There were a number of buildings and key locations in the city there that were affected by the Super Bowl security plan. So it's a give and take. And fortunately for the NFL, they get great support from the local, state, and federal officials because, as you know, the Super Bowl, since 9/11, the Super Bowl has been upgraded from a security rating standpoint. So the first Super Bowl after 9/11, which was Super Bowl 36, played in New Orleans, that was designated as a national special security event, an NSSE. And so the Secret Service, by statute, was responsible for security. Every Super Bowl since that time has been designated a SEER 1, a Special Event Assessment Rating 1 national security event, which is slightly down from the NSSE, but it's one of very few events each year that has that designation.
And what does that mean in terms of the presence that law enforcement has at those type of events?
Well, what that means is that when the designation comes down from the Department of Homeland Security as a SEER 1 event, that permits federal agencies to expend appropriated dollars in support of the event. So the resources that we receive, when I was at the NFL, that we received from the federal government are staggering. because this event is an iconic event. There are a lot of people traveling to see the event. It's obviously viewed all around the world. And given the state of what we have to deal with from a terrorism perspective worldwide, you need to take the reasonable steps necessary to protect the venue and everyone that's going to attend the event. So having that designation allows the NFL to be able to do what it really needs to do to protect the event. If not for that, the NFL could never pull this off on its own, and we get such great support. The NFL gets great support from local authorities, state police, and also the federal government.
If I could just pose a question. Now, I happened to be in New York, terrorist strikes back in 2001. So the first post 9/11 major sporting event I covered was the World Series that year, Yankees Arizona, and you could tell right then and there that there was a change forever in the way we enter sports venues. That was 17 years ago. Have we raised a generation of Americans who are accustomed to that and are more willing to go through the process, and you have fewer and fewer issues with the fandom coming into venues that we might have had 15, 16, 17 years ago?
Absolutely. When I was at the NFL, we made a number of changes to the screening process when fans come into our stadiums. And when I started at the league, we were doing a pat-down search. Then we did a modified pat-down search. Then we went to handheld metal detectors, and ultimately we designated in our best practices that we would use walk-through metal detectors at all NFL gates. And I can tell you, as each one of those steps were taken, our fans were very responsive and cooperative in that process because they're very smart and understand that what we're trying to do is to provide the highest level of security for them. We want them to be able to come and enjoy the game, the event, without having to worry so much about the other aspects of life intruding on it. So even though, yeah, you do go through, much like an airport, you go through a certain level of screening, and for Super Bowl, it's even more so. You're right. Fans have become accustomed, I think, to a higher level of security. And I'd like to think at the NFL we've tried to set the bar to a point where we can provide that balance between necessary security and not making it too onerous for fans to attend the event.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Jeffrey Miller is the former NFL Security Vice President and Chief Security Officer. He has done security for 8 Super Bowls. Now, we are going to turn and take a minute to check in with Philadelphia, a fan from Philadelphia. Joining us is J. Scott Smith. He's a reporter and producer from WHYY, and he's going to tell us what is going on in Philly. Hi, Jay.
Good afternoon.
Now, Jay, we have heard lots of things about Philadelphia fans, particularly that they're sort of rambunctious, rowdy, rude. Do you think the reputation matches reality?
Well, I can speak as someone who's been here in Philadelphia for almost 3 years now, that, and I guess maybe it helps for where I grew up. I come from another city that had tended to pick up a tough reputation for its fan base coming from Detroit. And from what I've seen from Philadelphia fans is, I guess the best way to describe what Eagle fans are, what Philly fans are, they are very passionate. And it can be off-putting to people who aren't totally used to them. But I've kind of grown to really have a kinship with people here in Philadelphia because of the underdog mentality. It's almost like you take a college campus and extrapolate it across 3 million people. That's at times what this Eagle fan base is like. During this particular run, because really this whole season, they started 11-2, and the Eagles have been on this run ever since the beginning of the year. You can just feel it growing. But this is the type of place where, similar to when I was in college, that a day or two after an Eagle victory, everybody's in Eagle gear. I'm talking about jackets. I'm talking about hats. There are people who wear suits. They have ties. They have lapel pins. I've seen cufflinks. I've seen shoes. I've seen starter jackets. It is like a college atmosphere here. And yes, it does get a little rowdy, and they are kind of worrying about people climbing up poles and everything else out here, assuming the Eagles win. But I would say Eagle fans, the reputation isn't totally deserved. it is at times the old fashioned bad apples that ruin everything. But overall, Eagle fans are very passionate. That's the way I can describe it. They're not wild soccer rowdy like they are in Europe, where it's that bad. It's Eagle fans just are very passionate about their team, and really Philly fans in general are.
Now, I just want to point of clarification here. I know about the Crisco on the light poles. I've heard that the police are switching to gear oil instead on Sunday. Can you confirm this?
Yes, I have heard gear oil. I have seen Crisco. The irony of this is, in about a week, 2 weeks from now, after the Super Bowl is over, as much as they're trying to get people to not climb the light poles over in different parts of the city, over on Broad Street and over on Cottman Avenue, the interesting part is there is a festival out here where one of the things that people do is climb up greased poles. So maybe that's why this is happening, is that they're just getting practice in for the festival in a couple of weeks.
Gotcha. Now, one final question here. Are you optimistic the Eagles could win their first Super Bowl on Sunday?
I am, actually, because while this team has embraced the underdog mentality ever since they lost Carson Wentz, the QB who was challenging Tom Brady for MVP, he gets hurt in Los Angeles on December 10th, they've adopted this underdog mentality, and the city has really embraced it. I heard earlier where it was said that there's kind of a silent confidence. There's not that fear or foreboding that you normally have around here. There's an energy that's very palpable here. The Eagles have their fight song, Fly Eagles Fly. It's something that you're going to hear a lot of on Sunday, I'm sure. And I didn't know the words to this song until about a month ago. Now I know it inside and out because they play it everywhere. People sing it on the street. It's on radio stations. We've played it here at WHYY, and it has become a thing. There is a confidence here that I've seen in this team, and I've covered championship teams before that had this, and I feel it with the Eagles right now.
We're going to have to end it there. Thank you. That's J. Scott Smith. He's a reporter and producer from WHYY in Philadelphia. Thanks for joining us, and I think good luck on Sunday.
We appreciate it, but I don't think Philadelphia fans would be quick to say thank you. I'll put it like that.
Okay. Now, and finally, the most important part of the Super Bowl, the food. While Steve and I will have the option of eating a few special Super Bowl-themed items at the U.S. Bank Stadium on Sunday. For example, there's the South Philly pork roast sandwich, Steve, if you're interested.
Mm-hmm.
There's a clam roll for you if you'd like. You can also get a taste of Minnesota with State Fair-inspired cheese curds. I think you're going to be lining up for that, right?
And there's a burger with cheese inside it.
Right? Yeah, yeah, there's something crazy like that, too.
That's a big local item, yeah.
A lot of cheese.
Yes.
meanwhile, many Bostonians will be cooking their favorite game time food. Joining us to tell us about what he's cooking is Andy Husbands, chef, restaurateur, and author. He's currently at one of his restaurants, The Smoke Shop, in the Seaport. Thanks for joining us, Andy.
How are you doing, Sarah?
Good. I think we'll just cut right to the chase here. For people who are still looking for ideas for what to make, you know, for the game on Sunday, do you have any recommendations?
Yeah, you know, I'm a big fan of kind of cooking beforehand and then eating throughout. So things that can last, you know, not necessarily need to be scalding hot, like chili is really easy to do. Throw it in your crock pot and cook it all day, and then it's ready to go. You know, I know you're a vegetarian. You can certainly make a vegetarian chili if you like, pretty easily done with root vegetables. As well as wings. I think wings are mandatory at any Super Bowl.
So what are you cooking?
I will be doing wings and tacos and chili, but I'll also be working. We have a large event at our restaurant, so I will be, you know, attending them as well. So I'll kind of be everywhere.
And any recommendations for where fans should go to watch the game and get some great food?
You know, there's this place in Winthrop called JW's, and the chef is awesome, Chef Jay Silva. I love that place, and I know he's having a big event. Eastern Standard in Kenmore Square. I think Kenmore Square is always the place to be when we win a championship, which we will this year. So Eastern Standard, great cocktails, great food. And, of course, I'd be remiss to, you know, mention the Smoke Shop has two giant events happening as well. So, you know,
Eastern Standard may have the best burger in Boston, I should add.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's quite tasty.
Steve, what's your go-to Super Bowl food?
Steak tips, chicken wings. I'm a meat guy. You're not. Deal with it.
All right. Well, thank you, Andy Husbands. Andy Husbands is a chef and restaurateur, author and owner of Tremont 647, Sister Sorrel, and The Smoke Shop. Visit RadioBoston.org for a special Super Bowl recipe from Andy. Thanks again, Andy, for joining us.
Thank you. Go Pats.
That's all from Minnesota, where it's 6 degrees. So you won't find me taking the polar plunge in downtown Minneapolis, and I won't be taking the zip line across the Mississippi River, but I will be covering the game Sunday for WBUR. I want to send a special thanks right across the table here to Steve Buckley, sports columnist at the Boston Herald. Thank you for joining us.
Pleasure.
And thank you also to Minnesota Public Radio for hosting us so generously and getting us through the technical difficulties earlier in the program. Much appreciated. You are the true champions of the day. If the Patriots make it to the Super Bowl next year, Ozzie, I'm looking right at you. We're taking you with us. And now I'd like to tell you that Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR station. Our show is produced by Jamie Bologna and Allison Bruzek. We had help today from Zoe Mitchell, Lily Tyson, and Anna Saldinger. And also cannot forget Martin, only a game producer, Martin Kessler, helped as well. A special thanks to NPR engineer Michael Osborne. Tim Skog is our technical director. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. I'm Shira Springer. This is Radio Boston.